Hello, everybody. Welcome to another edition of Cambridge Inside Out. My name is Robert Winters.
And my name is Patrick Barrett.
Patrick Barrett, Mr. Barrett, how are you?
I'm well. How are you doing?
I'm doing fine here. I'm sitting here with all the good lighting and you're still over there in that cave, but that's okay.
In my dungeon.
Yeah, but it's a good dungeon.
You know, it is.
Well equipped. So anyway, today is, what is today's date? December 6th, 2022. There are a few interesting things going on around town here, and we've got a few particular topics I wanted to focus on. And I thought maybe the first thing I would mention right now is that right now, as we speak, there's actually a meeting of the official charter review committee, right? That's actually started at 5:30. It will probably go to approximately 7:30. And that's happening right now, right now. I'm going to just say up front that even when there is no conflict, I often can't really bring myself to watch it live because I get a little irritated. Mm-hmm. Quite honestly, they've been basically meeting now for 4 months. And they barely decided basically how they're going to conduct their meetings.
That is an amazingly Cambridge thing.
It is an amazingly Cambridge thing. And I'll say two things. One is that at the last meeting, which I only watched as a recording, there was a kind of an interesting controversy. There was it's part of the, you know, some people have decided they wanted to have like a preamble to what the Charter Review Committee was doing. And as part of the preamble, they put in some, I thought it was actually pretty charged language, basically to the effect of, with the acknowledgement that Cambridge was built on land stolen from indigenous people and financed by brutal slavery, we strive to improve the existing charter, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I said, well, depending on whether you believe that, you know, in whole, in part, or not at all, I was wondering, do you folks know actually what you're supposed to be doing here in writing, in drafting or recommending changes to a charter? Or are you on some other mission entirely? You know, I was kind of flabbergasted to be watching this, and then not only watching it, but watching multiple members of this committee go on and on about how, oh yeah, absolutely. And I think of, what the heck is, and there was one brave member who actually wrote a dissenting opinion. She was sick for the meeting. She had COVID and basically said, look, I'm okay with some of the procedures and this and that, but this mission, this proposed value statement, don't you think we're being pretty presumptuous about every single person in Cambridge by telling them,
Who was this brave soul?
This was a woman named Susan Schell.
Thank you, Susan.
And she was great. And even though we only got to just hear the words, in fact, they didn't even have the letter available. I had to ask for that special after the fact. It's part of the meeting materials now. So that's why I was able to read the content of it. But at least three or four members of the committee, there were 14 members present, said like, well, I can't say that I believe in it, I agree with anything she said, even though everything she said made sense and was actually quite kind and thoughtful and non-confrontational, but they felt obligated to somehow, cancel her or something because my God, you should raise an issue.
We live in a bit of a post-fact virtue signalist kind of society. So like, when people, people put those things at the end of their emails or they put these things in their preambles, I oftentimes feel like this is almost like small town theater. Because like if you take like the natural conclusion of what they're saying at heart, you say, well, okay, do you own a house? Then you're going to give the deed back to the person that you stole it from? Are you like, what's your plan to do with that? Or are you just saying that to sort of coat yourself in a sort of a shield of virtue, which...
Well, after I read that first, what I did is I went back to my 1877 History of Cambridge book by Lucius Page, who was town clerk, city clerk, basically giving
Robert,
some history.
Fun fact about Lucius Page, we were going to name the 907 Main Hotel the Page at one time.
I know, because he actually lived like right around the corner.
Yeah.
And anyway, I went back actually just as sort of my own personal Thanksgiving gift to myself. I actually went and did some optical character recognition and edited basically some of his whole chapter on, the Indian history is what they would have called it in the 1877. And it's much more nuanced and it's much more interesting. And it's not, you know, this notion that there was just some sort of, you know, horrible takeover, whatever, is it's that's not so clear.
Well, I think there ought to be some recognition that, like, throughout human history, we've all had sort of moments where we've been less than civil to each other, and that the world itself is a bit of a melting pot as a result of that lack of civility, and that we evolve in time, that we don't really judge ourselves by the standards of 1,000 years ago or even 500 years ago or even 100 years ago. But oftentimes we seem to like to do that more and more now, because I think people are really bored, or they're just feeling like they need to find a way to shield themselves from the sins of the ancestor, which I was like, seems to me like a very selfish practice.
I always see, like, to what end? I mean, what do you accomplish? I mean, I'm much more sort of like, let's do something here. Like, let's accomplish stuff, right? Anyway, so I was pretty horrified, but as we speak right now, they're probably yelling at each other or not. Maybe they've all decided to kiss and make up, you know, but it was wild to sort of to really see this dysfunction.
Maybe happening. They're focusing on the charter.
Well, yeah, wouldn't that be something? Now, having said that, I'll just say that on the agenda for the meeting for tonight, there was actually a point by point, you know, background on the Plan E charter. And after that, there was also sort of a structure laid out by the people from the Collins Center about what are the elements of a charter if there is to be a revised charter. Mm-hmm. And it could just basically take a lot of planning and just move it forward and or modify or make some serious changes or whatever. But it was more like getting down to business. Now, part of me thinks, well, maybe somebody on the committee said, well, we're just sitting here in the mud, spinning our wheels, and maybe it's time to start acting like adults. And they are.
That's a very un-Cambridge thing to say, though.
I mean, really, I know.
Having the meeting is the action. Like, we're already doing it.
Apparently. Now, I have to say, you know, because sometimes, you know, because, you know, I had applied to be on that charter review committee. Sometimes, you know, it's when I was looking at the agenda materials, the whole exposition about Plan E, which they took from the city website. Well, guess what? The city took it from my website. And so I'm actually looking at, and their agenda materials, I'm looking at what I put together.
So right?
Now I'm both furious and flattered.
You could have gotten a lot of poetic license there. You could have at least written into the charter that I get a cheeseburger every Tuesday. Come on, Robert, think big picture.
Note to self. Right. But anyway, it's funny because if you actually look at it, even they actually have the live links still in there that go to my to some pages on my website. And it's like, all right, fine. You know, Siddiqui, Mallon, and Nolan wanted to make sure I was nowhere allowed nowhere near the Charter Review Committee. I said, well, I snuck in anyway, dear. You know? So you know, part of this is just funny to me. You know,
that's hysterical.
It is hysterical. Now I would say one other thing on the charter too, which is that, you know, John Pick and I are actually working on doing something kind of interesting. I think it's interesting, which is that, you know, it's certainly my opinion, and I think John and I agree about this, is that if you really want to talk about the charter for today, it's not a bad idea to understand the evolution of the charter from when we went from a town to a city, when they modified the 1846 charter in 1892, changed it in 1915, to understand the circumstances, to understand why people wanted to change a charter. In other words, you don't just change the charter by whim. You do it because there's a function, a purpose, a need. Right?
Well, by providing the preamble about stolen land, we've already traversed all of necessary history to understand where we are today, Robert.
Right.
Therefore, we don't need to understand why we have to have a charter. It's simply a result of theft, I'm guessing.
Yeah. Well, you know, I mean, it was more than a few indications in the 4 months of spinning their wheels, where you were hearing some of the personal perspectives of some of the charter committee members. Who basically, you know, want to do everything. Yeah, I mean, let's just say this, they're not there to review the charter.
Of course not.
They're there almost like a lobbyist would be there to basically put things in that somehow would be beneficial to them or their perspective. This, to me, that's not the job description, or it should never have been the job description. So I don't know how this went off the rails, but it went off the rails.
I think we've seen a pattern of council overreach that extends into this charter review, whether it be the offices they built for themselves, the aides that they've had, the secondary aides, the staff. Right now it's almost as if we have nine mayors sort of running in nine different directions on top of a city manager, which lends me the more I think about it, the more I'm like, why don't we just scrap the council, go to a strong mayor, call it a day? But at the same time, the devil that you know versus the devil that you might be embracing is kind of a thing that holds me back.
Well, of course, I mean, I'm not going to go for that plan, only because I think that if you're lucky enough to get a really good manager, it's a high probability that you're going to get a better product than if you just have a strong mayor, a strong popularly elected mayor.
I don't disagree with you, Robert, but I just think that the current system right now, and perhaps maybe it's the lack of enforcement of our charter as it pertains to council aides, as it pertains to councillors themselves, to reel them in a little bit, and also for them, and also for councillors to self-regulate, because I think right now, as someone who's been to about nine different meetings in about 8 days, led by the city council, it's exhausting trying to keep up with this group, and that's not a good thing.
Right, and it wasn't always that way. I mean, as a person who's been paying attention for longer than I sometimes care to remember, it wasn't always this way. I think for the most part, back in the 1980s and 90s, whatever, the city councils at least knew their job. And at some point they started to forget what their job was and rewrite it in a way. And maybe that's really what's behind this whole rewriting of the charter, is that they just want more authority to them as individuals.
That's how I read it initially. I mean, I've always seen the council as trying to get more and more power allocated to their side of the fence, because they complained endlessly about whether it be Healy or Rossi or DePasquale, and they're all happy that Yee's in place now, but they're still, I think they don't want a city manager. They want like a manager that they could sort of direct, and then they sort of throw policy at him. Because right now, between the city community development department and the city staff, like they're really just, the tail is wagging the dog right now pretty heavily, and it's sad to watch.
Yeah, and actually, on the point about how charters have changed historically, based on the circumstances of the time, part of the reason why in 1938, eventually 1940 is when it passed, the Planning Charter passed. Part of the problem there was mismanagement. People could say, well, the mayor was under indictment. Okay, that's true too. But it was the inability to create and pass a budget. Yeah. And part of the reason for the inability to pass budget was the fact is that, remember, these are the Depression years. Out of all the best intentions, doling out jobs to everybody, out of taxpayer money, so much so that they were, putting real hardship on property owners who, this is a real estate tax, right?
Ever see the movie Miller's Crossing?
I know of it, but I don't remember.
Fantastic Coen Brothers movie, but a lot about political intrigue and basically hiring from within, whether it's the Irish or the Italian, which I represent two halves of either side, but we were all well-employed.
Right, exactly right. But yeah, so at that point, I think in 1938, the campaign for Plan E was actually centered to some degree on the representativeness of proportional representation. That was a bad strategy, because honestly, nobody was going to vote for that as a standalone idea.
Yeah.
But by the time the second pass, and it failed in the first ballot, but when it came around back on ballot in 1940, the argument was there about the shortcomings of the way the city was being managed, and then it won in a landslide. And people were perfectly okay with the proportional representation aspect of it. But the thing is, it was really, and I actually had thankfully I had an opportunity to talk to people who were around back then, who said, oh, it was definitely voting, people were voting for city manager, right? So, and I also look at it and say, well, how long have these charters existed at times? So you went from 1846 to 1892, there were revisions all along. And then it was the big change to 1915, which was largely because that's when the state was taking the initiative of creating plans, plan A, B, C, D. So we said, okay, we'll take B, right? You know, so that was really the impetus of, I believe, of 1915. But then it was really the circumstances of the 20s through the 1930s, whatever, and the necessity of doing something different is why we took Plan E. And now you may like dislike some aspects of it, and I personally can make some proposals for things that could be changed. But it's persisted for 80 years, largely because it's been successful. Mm. People need to remember that. You know, it wasn't, lately, I think political patronage in one form or another, whether it's, you know, people hiring their campaign workers and ex-wives as their city council aides, et cetera, you know, that seems to be on the rise.
I don't believe that liberals, progressives in general, and most Cantabrigians are able to celebrate success. It's a genetic issue, I believe, but they are simply unable to recognize when something works.
Well, you know, proof will be in the pudding. So next year, Charter Review Committee will come around with some piecemeal or a pack June 30th. And then they're going to have to make some decisions about what they want to put on the ballot. I imagine at this point, it will likely be the most self-serving of the recommendations, unless there's an uprising of people in the city to say, oh, wait a minute. This isn't about you, Counselor so-and-so.
There will absolutely be a push to extend council terms to 4 years. I think you can bet your bottom dollar on it.
Which I think would be a dreadful mistake.
I agree.
And I will make, if I was on the Charter Review Committee, the moment anybody perked up about that, the next words out of my mouth would be, okay, then what is the recall provision for, somebody, because that's a long term and you need to have a recall provision if you're going to have extended terms. You know, one can easily make the case that if you have 1 year terms and 2 year terms, that the recall is the next election, right?
The only thing that gives me hope, Robert, is that I wake up in the morning knowing that I only have to deal potentially with some of the numbnuts on that council for 2 years.
Right.
Having to think about them for 4 years would just be depressing.
Right. Well, but I'm sure they'll make the case. They will. Absolutely make the case. All right, so now that's one thing that's sort of going on right now, and I'll review the tape in another day or so. It's amazing how, you know, something, even though it's recorded in Zoom, I actually had to wait over a week of begging before they even made the recording. So much for public access and so much for public input and information here. The fact that these are all in Zoom to begin with is a bit repulsive to me. But hey, it's the way of the world for the moment, at least, right? But if they don't start having some actual real public meetings at some point soon, I'm going to be pretty angry. I'm pretty much at the anger point now as it is. I'm going to say that right out. I'm not happy about this process. So, all right. Another thing that's happening right now, or not right now, but happened 5 days ago. Mm-hmm. We talked about in the last show, is that it was a vacancy on the school committee.
Yeah.
Akriti Bambi took a job in New York, split town, submitted a resignation effective November 15th. And then the vacancy recount was scheduled for December 1st. Now, of course, it was really a formality because those of us who had the ballot data and had the election software, we were able to run the numbers and see exactly what happens. And so it was known, the results were known. I actually found it funny that, me and, a reporter person were at the vacancy recount and then Gary Mello showed up. And then at some point later on, I think the person who was the campaign manager from a year ago for Carolyn Hunter came in the door after the results were already announced. The candidate was nowhere to be seen, because the results were known. It was very anticlimactic, but there was a sort of a curiosity. There's no question about who was going to be elected and how, and the correctness of the procedures and the quality of the software. It's all fine, but there is an issue that kind of came up for those of us who are sort of ultra nerds about this, which is that, how do you actually announce the result. I mean, it sounds a little nerdy, but bear with me. So when a candidate becomes elected, they basically reach the point where it's mathematically impossible for anybody else to be elected. Then they're elected, right? Well, the way the software works right now is it actually does allow the defeated candidates to continue to receive transfers after the result is over, which makes it the margin between the winning candidate and the losing candidate seem narrower than it really would have been. But the question is, well, is that consistent with the rules? And depending on how you read the rules, the answer is yes. But there was a bit of a debate about it.
Excuse me, nerd, but what is the effect of this? What is the implication?
There is no practical effect. the same person gets elected. It's just a matter of when you say so-and-so beat this the next in line by 100 votes, right? You know, well, was it 100 votes or was it 60 votes? You know, it's like, it doesn't matter. You're elected, right? But it was funny. So I said to myself, well, wait a minute. I think the way we used to do it in the past was one way, but the way the things were written sort of, nowadays was seen to be a little bit different. And I said, geez, I wonder if I can actually find something. So I'm actually going to do a little quick share screen here because I think it's funny as hell. So what I did was I found in my vast archives,
oh my God,
a photo that I took of the chalkboard that I was keeping in 1994 at St. Bartholomew's Church. This was when the Bill Walsh vacancy recount occurred that elected Anthony Galluccio. You'll notice Anthony Galluccio is in a pink box here, right? But in it, it actually refers to what the current quota to
824?
Right, exactly.
Isn't that super low?
Well, only because there's so many invalid ballots when you were actually doing, because most of the candidates who've elected are excluded. So there's a lot of exhausted ballots. So you revise the quota with each, basically to say, what's the 50% mark? So I wrote, and I didn't know that I even done this. I didn't remember. And then I had written up there, current quota equals 824. And then what do you see under Galluccio? 868. So he was clearly they finished the round. Right. You know, so that in terms of how he beat McSweeney 868 to 779. Right. And but the way it would have been reported using the software as it is today might have looked a little bit different in the reporting. But again, it doesn't change the winners and losers. But it was funny that I said, well, wait a minute, let me go look in my collection. And I found actual photographic evidence of the way it was done back then. So wow. I kind of got a charge out of it. That was 1994. That was do the math, Robert, 28 years
either,
ago.
Either an election charter, you're trying to solve a murder. Either way, success.
Well, you know, it made me feel some satisfaction to sort of just at least clarify that, you know. And you know, and we might actually modify the way that this is reported in the future. We'll see. It doesn't matter. Let's just emphasize, it doesn't matter. The winner is the winner, you know, and the others didn't win. And that's the only thing that really matters. But I thought it was kind of a funny thing. So anyway, so we're starting to run a little bit low on time here. So I thought maybe for the next half hour, we can talk a little bit about the lab ban, which is sort of being froze before us right now.
Which lab ban would that be?
Well, actually, that's actually a pretty serious question because there was a proposal that came in from counselors,
Zondervan and McGovern.
There's two. Okay.
Yeah.
And then it was sort of like, well, there were some questions raised, but because it came in as part of a city council order, they referred it to committees for some further study before they would send it to planning board and ordinance committee. Whereas had it come in as a citizen petition, they wouldn't have had that option. So subsequently, Mr. Zondervan and his city council aide chose to do it anyway. So, So anyway,
and presented as a grassroots process.
Oh yes, very much a grassroots process from the political inside grass. Yes.
Oh.
Yeah. So let's talk about that in the next half hour, but I just want to end here just with a little quick update. I'm not going to show any fancy graphs or anything like that, but COVID numbers are actually up a bit. Mm-hmm. I'm not alarmed. I'm going to just say that right up front here. There is a different variant that's going around here. There were two new deaths reported today. So that's pretty serious. There were 39, I think, new cases, which is a lot higher than the single digits that we were seeing. So we are having a bit of a mini bump here right now. I hope it's just a mini bump, so we'll see what happens, whether the body politics chooses to react or overreact or be reasonable about it. We'll see. But I thought it was at least worth mentioning that was, sort of our current situation here. I'll give 45 seconds. Only just also mention here that I was actually pretty pleased with the report from the 90-day report from the city manager, which I thought was sort of a nice thing. It's a great gesture. Mm-hmm. It's just very different than his predecessors to say, I've been on a job 90 days. Here's my experience of 90 days. This is what I think we've done. This is what I think we could do better. You know, in terms of salesmanship, at the very least, it was damn well done, you know, and very well received by the city council.
We'll see how he is after the next 90 days.
Yeah, no, and we could definitely talk some more about that, you know, especially when it comes to see how he does with the board appointments.
Yes.
Coming up. Yes. So anyway, we'll be back in a few minutes on Cambridge and Set Out.